This is Chris McGovern, and you're listening to The Glass Show.
Hello. How you doing? Hi.
So I was the Siri coming on at the beginning going, this will be recorded.
Yeah. I'm sorry that kind of sounds so creepy, but...
That's, of course, Natalie Gelman. A little funny, silly moment that occurred before about the beginning of our interview where she was reacting to the electronic voice at the beginning of the Evier recorder, telling the other side that they're about to be recorded, you know, so it was priceless. I had to include it. And Most the While is a song from Street Lamp Musician, which was an EP that she raised money for on Kickstarter last year. She's about to do this again. In fact, she is doing that, and she's raised a lot of money. In fact, as we speak, while I'm recording this, she's actually reached her goal. That doesn't mean you don't have to contribute money or that you shouldn't, because she actually still needs some money because Kickstarter, unfortunately, gives people a shitload of fees that they have to pay. So, essentially, yes, please. I will have the link, but yes, please continue to support her project. And there'll be some more songs from Natalie Gelman as well. I decided to give her a call and talk about this project. So what follows is our conversation with Natalie Gelman on the Glass Show. Wow, I can't even say the name of my podcast. The Glass Show. Okay, anyway, this is Natalie Gelman. Thank you.
Sorry I'm not doing video. I'm just waking up.
So. Oh, that's okay. I'm sure you look great, but that's all right. I mean, you know, seriously, though, you always look great. So, I mean, I'm not kidding. You really do. So, Thank you. There you go.
That's because I only let people see me when I look great, though.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I mean, I totally believe it, you know, and you don't have to, you know, sell it to me or anything. So listen, thank you for doing this. I'm probably going to really like push this on the glass. Hopefully more people will see it that way.
Thank you for doing this, really, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's super helpful to get the word out. And It's really amazing how more people do find you when you're running a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I've probably made even a dozen new fans that have come along that never would have found me if I wasn't mm-hmm. doing this.
Well, you know, I think Kickstarter in many ways probably, gives credibility to artists, you know, because, I mean, obviously people will see, well, if you're using Kickstarter, you must be that passionate about what you're doing, you know. Because if you believe in it that much, you just need, you know, I mean, it's just an opportunity to help people along. And, I'm very glad that, I mean, you did one for Street Lamp Musician, so, you know.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see the progression from, the project I did for Street Lamp Musician to this project, because I thought the Street Lamp Musician project went so well. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of work, but comparatively, it was pretty easy. You know, I was raising only $5,600 compared to, or I think it was actually $5,300, and then we raised a couple hundred over. Mm-hmm. And that I was super clear about. This is to the dollar where your money is going, mm-hmm. you know? And then this one, in a lot of ways, when I was deciding what to do, I was super scared. And I was thinking, gosh, I don't know if I'm going to make $12,000. I really probably need more like 15, but I don't feel like I can make that number. And I think I've been working pretty hard the whole way through to let people know, to the point where I'm almost scared that I'm getting annoying.
No.
You know, but I think I'm pretty conscious of that. And I sort of backed off. Mostly because I'm on tour, not really because I wanted to back off, but because I'm balancing and juggling a lot of different things mm-hmm. right now. And you have to keep other things going. I think a lot of bands do run a Kickstarter and it kind of consumes them to reach their goal. Mm-hmm. So I wanted a goal that I can reach. And hopefully once I get to 12,000, I can explain to people, look, like this was the very, very bare minimum. Mm-hmm. to cover my costs combined with money that I've already been saving. So, you know, if we want to actually give this project wings.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. There's so many things. I was reading some really great info about having vinyl, mm-hmm. and I really love to do that. And I've researched how much
there
that would
go.
Be. And so I don't know, just some different ideas and some different dream mm-hmm. ideas that would make pushing the goal further would be really fun.
I'm glad you're doing that because I started collecting vinyl again. I can't do it too much because I still need money for rent, you know, because I'm living alone now. But obviously, it's a great thing. I think a lot of your audience is happy for that because, you know, I mean, I don't know how many hipsters are in your audience, but if there are quite a few of them, then, you know, there'll be more now. They realize
I know.
You have a record.
So I haven't done it yet because I'm nervous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't need to be nervous.
You know,
this is really cool. This is a cool thing.
Yeah.
This is a really cool thing. Your face is going to be on a large album cover now.
I know. Well, that's the thing. I was reading about it. I mean, but I don't. I own some vinyl, but I don't own a turntable.
Oh, that's sad.
I know. It's
you
really got to
come over here and play your albums.
You know what it is? I kind of have this idea that, like, I'll find one in a... I'm really sentimental like this, and so I have this idea that I'm going to, like, find one in a thrift shop that's, like, really beautiful mm-hmm. or... And maybe I will. I'm going to a couple thrift shops I know in Oregon when I have some days off.
I basically, you know, kind of settled for something cheap, you know, when I got a turntable. It's not the greatest one, but I was like, okay, but it's a decent one and it plays. It's got a decent stylist on it or whatever, stylus rather. I mean, that's how much I know. I know very little about the technology myself, even though I grew up with record players, you know.
Well, it's interesting stuff. I read yesterday morning, I think the Gibson Guitars blog posted something about mastering your music for your vinyl pressing. Mm-hmm. And that really when mastering was such a huge deal, and it's still a huge deal now when you master your mm-hmm. project, but not only am I looking at, you know, the pressing of the vinyl and then shipping things that are bulkier and more weighty and maybe have more of a chance of getting damaged. Mm-hmm. But you actually want to have someone else look at it who really masters vinyl and can something about how the high ends get boosted on the, but that you want to cut those on your recordings and boost the low ends. And or mm-hmm. I don't know exactly all the details, but it's really pretty interesting. You know, it's a whole different, it's a whole different medium, and so you have to honor that. And if we reach the goal, what I'll probably do is add, because I haven't done it yet, Chris. Mm-hmm. It's something I want to do, but I'm like, it's not necessary for this to get mm-hmm. out. But I might add a reward that's a vinyl option. Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll have to change my pledge then.
I know it's super weird, and they're not. Yeah, there's. I don't know how many to print, and I've got to figure it out.
I mean, I think that whoever you talk to, they're probably going to suggest that you do a limited run of like 1,000 or something, maybe even less than that, like 500, perhaps.
I was thinking 500, just because they're super bulky, and that's the thing with CDs. The cost jumped down, and I can sell. You know. I'm putting in an order today, I think, for another 3,000 CDs. So CDs I'm constantly selling, mm-hmm. and I think it's a confidence issue, too. Like, I know how to sell a CD, but I'm nervous about selling vinyl. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I
think the thing with vinyl is, like, the less you have of them, the more interest there might be for it because, like, you'll say, oh, you know, there's really only a few copies of the vinyl. And then more people will be like, oh, man, I better get one now before they're all gone. You know, that's sort of the thought that occurs there, you know. So and the thing is, too, like audiophiles are the ones that also love vinyl because it sounds better technically. There's a technical issue
there.
This
all started because I was playing in record stores. on my last couple tours, I've really been trying, and I am doing it on this tour too. I'm dropping into Music Millennium or Millennium Music in Portland, and I'm doing an in-store appearance there.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland. Sorry, okay. Yeah. I couldn't resist. So I love Portlandia.
Go ahead. Yeah, everyone, when I play in record stores, they always want vinyl. So I guess that's where I'll be selling them, if nothing else. I'll just have to do a tour of only record stores.
Well, you know, I mean, that's you can't fail with that. That's great, you know, because usually, like, you do a live in-store appearance, and even people that have never seen you or heard of you are going to, like, stop what they're doing for a few seconds, at least, if not, you know, completely captivated.
No, I've always had great experiences with them and picked up new, like, good, supportive bands and people and communities. It's kind of the pulse, you know, the pulse of a music community. So I try to do them.
Flowers and cigarettes on Hudson and Bleecker, jet black and jet set to anywhere a little further than here. Feels like the harder I pull my foot to the pavement, less of me you all seem to hear. Oh, New York, won't you listen to a street lamp musician singing her heart out for you tonight, singing my sorrows with a hope for tomorrow, and everything is gonna be alright. Sneakers and high heels, I watch them walk by me on streets that have been mine, but I don't know them anymore. Shops round here changing faster than seasons. People try, but it's just easier to ignore. Oh, New York, won't you listen to a street lamp musician singing her heart out for you tonight, singing my sorrows with a hope for tomorrow, and everything is gonna be alright. And I don't wanna die with a melody inside of my head that the world needs to hear. So I'll keep writing my songs, even if they're driven by. A street lamp musician singing her heart out for you tonight, singing my sorrows with a hope for tomorrow, when I'm gonna make everything all right.
That's, of course, Street Lamp Musician from the EP of the same name by Natalie Gelman. So this is pretty cool now, and of course I take it, like, by now people probably go to your concerts and they know the songs. They probably call out for them. They probably sing along with them.
There's a certain amount of that, you know. There's definitely a certain amount of that, and I think it happened over, really, with my last CD. There was that shift where the song started mattering so much to people that kind of stuff was happening. Mm-hmm. it's really in a like a handful of people kind of thing, or at my bigger shows where I'm playing to my hometown or to LA or to New York City. Basically, that's where people are, you know, super familiar with my music, because those are the markets that I've lived in and pushed the most, I guess, naturally. But then there are pockets. I mean, there is, yeah, and that there's people all over that have that to a certain extent. And I'll be like, and I normally actually will throw it out, because I'm like, hey, you guys came and drove here for however long it took you to get here. Is there a song that you want me to play that you haven't heard me play yet? And it's always something weird.
Oh, really?
it's never what I was going to play. So it's really a good thing that I ask, because it's always something that probably won't ever go on a record. They probably heard me play it once live, once before, or on stage it or something, you know? And so, but I want to do that for them.
What gets the most requests of your material?
As far as the songs that probably won't go on a record that get lots of requests, are, and now everyone's going to request them more. Love Let Me Go. Mm-hmm. Love Let Me Go gets lots of requests, and so does Love Song Junkyard. Love Let Me Go, I've actually wanted to release, but I don't think it's going to end up on the CD. We have so many great songs.
So it's
songs.
A live favorite, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something, people hear it and, you know, something in there resonates with them. My most requested song from my first CD, it's either Never Had You, or which is my favorite, which I love to play, or Cross Your Heart, which is this like angry, distorted vocal song.
Cross your heart and hope to die. Stick this needle in your eye. Don't you fall, don't you fall too far behind. You want what you know is lost, and I can be had at any cost. Give it up or walk the line.
Totally the range of what I do.
That's,
you know,
definitely my favorite. I think last time you did a Google Plus chat or whatever, I think you did like one of those, you know, live Google staged things, and I was part of that, and I said, can you do Cross Your Heart? And you had to like save it for the very end.
Did I make it through, or did
you probably,
I
know, I think you just sort of did a very laid back sort of, you know, shorter version of it, probably because you hadn't played it in a while.
I think I remember forgetting one of the verses and then realizing it after the fact, like, because it's hard, you know. Now I have hundreds of songs that I've written and put on records or not put on records, and I'm really excited because this Kickstarter is gonna be my first full length, so a lot of songs are finally gonna find a home.
Well,
and
there's
some great new ones, but one of the ones that gets requested and kind of was a hidden song, because sometimes I write songs, and that's what Love Song Junkyard's about, is the songs I write that I don't think I have interest in playing, and they still have to be written. But one of those songs was Will You Sell Your Soul to the Devil, and everyone hears that song, loves it, requests it. And so finally I was like, you know what, this needs a home on a record. I'm playing it a lot these days, and my own little hang up about it, which was, oh, like, I don't know, I just had this weird unconscious hang up about the whole thing, which was like, oh, I can only play this around Halloween, and that it's really dark and edgy, and like, and people don't need to hear this at a live show.
Soul to the devil when he comes offering his price, 'cause it takes the man to make a man. Will you even think twice? Will you sell your soul to the devil? Will the devil even buy? He's got bills to pay, he's got the need to keep the fires high. Will you sell your soul to the devil? Will you see through his disguise? When he comes to you so beautiful, you can't believe your eyes. Heart at the bottom, heart out to empty tunnels, breathe deep in the subway air, and the oxygen is almost gone, and then I see him standing there. He doesn't want my mind or body, but he'll take them just the same, and he'll twist me in so many ways till I don't even know my name. Then he'll give me what I wish for, leave me with his business card. It reads success just a call away. If you don't want to work so hard, suddenly I'm somewhere else, playing to 10,000 strong. It feels so right, cause here in hell there's no such thing as wrong. There's no such thing as wrong. There's no such thing as wrong. Will I sell my soul to the devil when I've used up all I can? Will there be anything left to give him that was here when it all began? All alone with my guitar, when night has turned me in, and tomorrow I'll be leaving. If this nightmare ever ends,
not from a live show, but from a TV show, Alive with Clive. That's the song that we were just talking about, Will You Sell Your Soul to the Devil, which may or may not be on the new album. We're not sure. I guess we'll just have to stay tuned.
You know, it's true. Some of my live shows, it's too much if I'm playing a winery or something where it's not really about the music and the artist. It's really just about entertaining.
Exactly.
But the people who come to my shows or a house concert want to hear that song. And I think it reminds us all to, it's really about pursuing what you want to pursue, what your heart is meant to be doing, in spite of obstacles. And that's what a lot of my songs are about. But maybe none say them quite as clearly.
Well, audiences definitely plug into songs, you know, they plug into them, and it's, and I mean, like every performer will tell you, it's like, you know, it has a whole new turn for them. It has a whole new feeling, you know, once the audience reacts.
And you try not to let that affect you. You know, you really, I always try to show up and play the same for anyone who's listening versus no one who's listening, because there's always somebody who's plugged into what you're doing. And that's how you're able to develop something from playing the gigs at bars and stuff like that, where people aren't there for the music, they're there for the alcohol, is you can actually still slowly develop your following that way, if you're good and committed to it. But I think, yeah, it's so hard. It is a different show. You do, whether you try to or not, you do hold something. You hold your heart back, you know? You really do. And I was talking to a friend about it, about actually really good paying gigs at colleges yesterday, and I don't do too many of those anymore. I do ones where I love the college, I love the students. I've never had a weird thing there, and I feel appreciated. Some of them aren't the best paying gigs. I do them because I really love the students. And I was talking to her about it because she used to do them a lot too, and was saying, yeah, it got to the point where I was feeling like, okay, what am I being paid for my soul right now? Because you do, you just feel like nobody cares. I'm here to sell like a glitzy idea of them meeting an artist. And like, I am an artist, but I'm not, you know, I haven't, it's, I mean, there's so much as an aspiring anything, you always want more. So your own view of yourself is going to be always like, oh, what the heck have I done that anybody should listen to mm-hmm. me? But, you know, really a lot of those markets that pay well, but don't actually help you grow as an artist are really soul sucking. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you've got to, if you're going to do this long term, there's a lot of people I know that I met when I was playing in the college market that don't even do this anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very fly by night for them. And they're considered successful. Mm-hmm. You know, they're making $500 to $1,500 a show on the low end.
That's a song called The Lion, from originally from Streetlamp Musician, but this was a live recording from the Nine Bar and Bistro in Spokane, Washington, taken from YouTube.
It would be wonderful if we could sort of find a way to get, like, you know, places that want to hire musicians to work a little bit more with the musicians and like, sort of make considerations at least for their needs, because, you know, as you know, that almost doesn't exist. You know, there's just too many like clubs that will, or, you know, I mean, you know which one I'm thinking of particularly. You probably do, because we were there. You know, we were at not the Space, but the place, Huntington Cafe. And now, I mean, I think I finally revealed this to you later. They decided to not pay us for that show that we did. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not going to tell Natalie. Instead, I'll just pay her out of my pocket, because it's unfair to get her to come all the way from New York to do this thing. Because you were living in the city at the time. And for you to come over, you know, I don't even know if the amount I gave you even covered your travel costs, you know. But I was like, I got to give her something, because, you know,
You're so nice. I totally had no idea.
Yeah, I thought I told you. I guess this is the first time you're hearing it. I'm sorry.
No, you did tell me last time, but I had no idea that night. And it's funny because I remember there being a decent amount of people
Yeah.
there and bringing people into their establishment. And I gotta say, sometimes I just had an experience like that where I clearly had an email. It was a super small guarantee. And at the end of it all, at the end of the night, they didn't want to pay me. And they said, "Oh, well, normally we don't do this." And I said, "Yeah, but this was all addressed in our emails, which was, I do need a place to stay and I do need the guarantee. I need them both. And also my show is worth both and actually worth more
Definitely.
than both." So you actually are still underpaying me, but you absolutely have to pay me. And I think there's a sense so much of like you're doing this for for reasons for your health. I can't think of it exactly what I'm trying to say, but like there's a sense with musicians that we shouldn't be paid by the general
I know.
population. No, we actually are giving, we worked for this, and you're not just paying for the 2 hours or 3 hours we spent on stage. You're paying for the time it takes to learn those songs, to learn new songs, to learn our instruments, to drive there, to keep everything working. I just put another $200 in my car yesterday. Like, it's always an expense. And CDs aren't getting cheaper. I mean, little wallets are still costing over $1 a piece, even, at the rate you buy them. So there's so many expenses that go into this, and people don't realize that. And it's not really my job to teach them that, but it is my job to stand up for myself. And so I emailed that venue back a few days later, and I said, "Look, here's the thing. I brought, and I knew, I said, I brought these people out. They all spent more than the money that you were going to pay me. And that's basically free marketing. Like, I've gotten half a dozen more people in your
Exactly.
venue that is in the middle of nowhere that would not have come out to see you. And you had, 12 other tables or however many full of birthday parties and people eating and whatever. It's like you can definitely afford this small guarantee. It's no sweat off your back, and it's huge sweat off my back. So make this right, basically. And they did. But I've had that experience where people, where I knew about it, where people didn't make it right. And it's really hard because the truth is I do it for, just the sake of doing it. But you do have so many expenses, and that wouldn't last very long. And
I know. And
so.
the thing is, there's too many people that run these places, and possibly also there's just too many people in general that think art shouldn't be rewarded with money, that it shouldn't be that it
Yeah.
like it like or that it's not really work, it's not really a
It's
work
amazing to
ethic.
me because what's funny is you make it look, it's amazing because you make it look as little as work as you can. So that's probably why they're thinking that. But it is so much work to, one of the things I really try to do, especially in between my songs and in my songs, is perform with a lot of energy and give, not just like love and put my heart out there and like really sing from what's really so for me and really be honest in my performance, but also to do the biggest performance I can. And probably that comes from playing on the subways for 12 years, and always trying to be louder than the trains passing by me. But part of that takes is so that people enjoy it, and a high energy show. I mean, some of our favorite artists in the world are all about their high energy performances, and that's so much work. That's all about how healthy I am and making sure all day I'm hydrating and getting ready for that show and thinking about what I'm eating and eating healthy, good food that is going to keep me, there. So I'm not. There's a huge difference when I'm not honoring the show, and that's an all day and all the time commitment that people don't realize. Like,
you put the beats in my heart, line them up like the edges of a song I used to know. Sang me to sleep and woke me up inside a dream with you. And all my wishes coming true. So dance with me under the sun. Let the snow fall down on you and me and everyone. It's a Main Street romance under Park City skies. As I watch the sun dance in your eyes, a silent film runs through the night. Fleeting scenes flicker on and off from somewhere distant, out of sight. They take me across a million memories I had, lives I knew, before my eyes caught sight of you. So dance with me under the sun. Let the snow fall down on you and me and everyone. It's a Main Street romance under Park City skies. As I watch the sun dance in your eyes.
That's a song called Sundance in Your Eyes by Natalie Gelman. That's actually a single that she recorded while she was performing at the... Or actually, I think the song was inspired by the Sundance Film Festival. And she mentions Park City, because I think it was in Park City, Utah. I should have asked her about that. It's a missed opportunity for you. But yeah, but that's a pretty good song, of course. And that's basically a single / download only. But I, you know, basically, all of her music you can find on nataliegelman.com. Her albums are available on iTunes, both Natalie Gelman, the self-titled album, and Street Lamp Musician. By the way, Cross Your Heart, which you heard a little snippet of, is on that album. I saw her play that song the first night I ever saw her, and the first night that I met her when she played at the Space. And basically, she was there, and she was playing on the same stage as a band we knew called Gretel from Massachusetts. I almost forgot about Gretel, you know? I mean, it seems like they're kind of lost in time now, even though they were essentially like the main act that night at the Space. But Natalie was like one of the first people to play, and she was so good. Crush Your Heart was just like a memorable part of that set too, because she just kind of just tore into it. I was just like, I can't believe this, you know, she's really, really good, you know. I mean, essentially there's lots of wonderful clips of her online too, on YouTube particularly, you know, so please check it out. And of course, nataliegelman.com is her website. And that's where you will find the Kickstarter link. It'd be like one of the first things you see on that page. And I mean, it's got a link address, but it's a really long one that I'm not prepared to read to you. So just go to her website. It'll give you information about donating to her Kickstarter for the new album. Here's something that you probably didn't know previously, and I didn't. I actually did talk about it with her during the interview, but we didn't use it on the recording. She does not yet have a manager or an agent. She completely manages herself, which is fabulous. You know, it doesn't really get talked about, maybe because she doesn't really want to bring attention to it, but can you imagine the kind of stuff she's done now and she doesn't have a manager? You know, I mean, it's like the wave of the future almost. But she has talked about getting a booking agent, which I kind of hope she does. You know, that'll help her along a bit, and then she could just do everything else, you know. It's astounding what she gets done, you know, by on her own, even, you know. So anyway, yes, more power to Natalie Gelman. Thank you, and thank you, Natalie, so much for being on the show. And anyway, this is The Glass Show. I'm Chris McGovern. We're going to end with a song called The Answer, which might actually be one of the upcoming tracks on this new recording that's going to be coming out, that's being funded right now. But this is a live version recorded at Chancellor Ranch in Bodega Bay, California, and it was taken from YouTube. It's pretty good. It's just her acoustic, you know. Anyway, thanks. Enjoy this. Thank you.
Life made me some promises never meant to keep. Set me up to break me down in places where I'm weak. Held me up against each day. Hope on the soles of my feet. Life made me some promises never meant to keep. Love took my heart before it wandered off to find something prettier and lovelier than what it left behind. It didn't mean to break me. That's just its design. Love took my heart before it up and left me blind. And I never known just how strong my soul had grown, just how wild my old dreams had become. Till I answers come more often than the questions you seek. If you're giving when it's hard, life has got you beat. Maybe what's important ain't the truth or the lie, but a hold of your word. Look them in the eye to know yourself through and through. So on the day you die, your love becomes the answer we can only find. Your love becomes the answer we can only find. Love becomes the answer we can only live by.
The Glass Show can be found on Podomatic and iTunes. On Podomatic, the address is chrismcgovernmusic.podomatic.com. On iTunes, go to the iTunes store, type in The Glass Show, S-H-O, and it should be the second entry under podcasts. Click on The Glass Show, and it's going to feature my picture, the one with the hat on. Click on that picture, and it brings you to The Glass Show page. And basically, click on subscribe, and you will hear every episode, or every new episode. And of course,
while you're there, you can listen to any episode you want that you haven't, or if you want to hear it over and over again, or any favorite of yours, you can just always just put them on. And anyway, to your wonderful delight, they have several ways of playing these pieces on any little device that you have, any big device that you have. Basically, the sky's the limit as far as iTunes goes. And follow The Glass and The Glass Show on Facebook. And follow me on Twitter. I'm at CMC The Glass Show. And of course, the original website that started it all is theglassblogismine.com for The Glass. And thank you so much for being a fan. I really appreciate it.